This is WNYC. I'm Leonard Lopate. Despite the bombings in London, details of the bombings in London remain sketchy, but there's general agreement that this was a terrorist attack, and a letter posted on a website often trafficked by al-Qaeda claims that a group calling itself the Secret Organization of al-Qaeda in Europe is responsible for the bombings. The letter also issued warnings to Denmark and Italy. And with me now is Timothy Naftali, a counterterrorism expert who worked as a contractor for this for the 9/11 commission. He is most recently the author of Blind Spot, The Secret History of American Counterterrorism. And welcome to my show.
Thank you, Leonard.
If it is indeed al-Qaeda that carried this out, what do you think they were hoping to achieve? Did the warnings to Denmark and Italy suggest that this is directly related to the invasion of Iraq?
I would say that they didn't achieve what they wanted to achieve. But the next couple of hours or days will help us assess this. Al-Qaeda certainly wanted to create as much havoc and mayhem as they did in Madrid, when one of their affiliates killed 192 people and injured 1,900. We don't yet know how many died on the double-decker bus, but it looks as if roughly 40 to 50 people died, and perhaps up to 1,000, but it's not clear, were injured. It's a very sad day for London, but it is a sign of the limits of al-Qaeda's abilities to create terror. I know that that's not the way many people are responding to this today. I've been watching CNN, which has perhaps the most inane coverage imaginable about what's happened, and I hope we'll discuss this. But to my mind, al-Qaeda wanted to kill many more people today, and it's a sign of their limitations that they couldn't.
Well, there's been a surge of al-Qaeda activity recently. Hasn't there been the killing of the Egyptian envoy in Baghdad that was filed just a little over an hour ago? Also, the attempted kidnap killing of the Bahraini representative in Iraq. Do you think that they are all coordinated?
Well, Leonard, I differentiate between Iraq and the war on terror. If you look at the statistics the National Counterterrorism Center issued just 3 days ago, you'll note that one-third of all terrorist victims in the world last year were Iraqi civilians. But the Iraqi front is one we created. When assessing al-Qaeda's abilities to disrupt the West, I would not look at Iraq, since Iraq is a self-inflicted wound by us.
But since this seems to be directly related to Iraq, as I mentioned earlier, the warnings to Denmark and Italy, the United States and England have already been attacked. They are the four major allies in the invasion and occupation of Iraq. Isn't this really an Iraqi situation now?
Well, Leonard, we have given them a rallying point. I will grant you that, but is international jihadism or extreme Islamism didn't start with Iraq. We just managed through our mishandling of counterterrorism to give them yet another way of recruiting people. But I would say that even if we were out of Iraq, and we will be, they'd still be trying to kill us. I mean, let's not forget the roots of this problem. Iraq just makes it easier for them. That's why the Iraqi situation is so annoying for those of us who study counterterrorism. It's an absolutely unnecessary front in this struggle.
Why not attack the Houses of Parliament or some other symbolic building, as was done in New York? Why attack public transit?
I don't know the mindset of al-Qaeda. They are trying to create havoc. This we understand. They want to kill people. You will get more victims if you attack a subway station. This is something that they remember the Japanese extremist Shimbun attempted to do in 1995. When you think of the fragility of the fabric of modern society, when you look at the sort of the nodes where we are at our most vulnerable, those include subway stations and train stations. So al-Qaeda is trying to hit us where our modern economy is most vulnerable. I think that's why they chose less symbolic targets in both Madrid and London.
Is it possible that they're just claiming responsibility and someone else might have done this?
Well, you know, when, you know, you have to be careful just after a crime. You have to wait for the dust to settle. But if you look at the likely candidates for this, most of them are Al-Qaeda-related or international jihadist affiliates. It's hard for me to believe that the IRA, this doesn't look like an IRA attack. The IRA habitually provided warnings before attacking Harrods or any other large center in London. Moreover, the IRA is in a bit of the doldrums now after having killed a couple of police informants and gotten a terrifically bad public press out of it. Who else could have been responsible? The globalists, the people who were out in the streets in Edinburgh? Up to now, they have expressed their anger through demonstrations, though violent, but not through bombings. So it seems to me you really have a very short list, and Al-Qaeda's at the top of it.
Have you ever checked into the website Spiegel Online that where the letter claiming responsibility appeared today? The letter states, "Rejoice, community of Muslims. The heroic mujahideens today conducted an attack on London. All of Great Britain is now shaken and shocked in the north, the south, west, and east. We've warned the British government and the British people time and again. We've kept our promise and have carried out a blessed military operation. We continue to warn the governments of Denmark and Italy and all other crusader governments, and we demand that all countries pull their troops out of Afghanistan and Iraq," and it was signed by the secret organization Al-Qaeda in Europe.
Leonard, I noticed that, by the way, remember I said that who wins or loses in this particular incident will be determined in the next days and weeks, and it's in our reaction to it. You notice they say that all of England is shaken. Well, all of England is not shaken. In fact, the British are handling this. I've been in touch with a number of friends in England. The British are handling this the way they handled IRA attacks. The British do not get shaken this way. In fact, I'd argue that the United States government is more shaken by this than the British government. Just a few minutes ago, the Homeland Security, without any credible evidence whatsoever, has raised the terror level in our mass transit systems. I can't imagine a better coup for the terrorists than establishing this kind of level of public concern in the United States. The Homeland Security people could raise awareness in the New York subway system and the LAPD in the LA subway system in Boston without a public alert. There are ways to do this without creating mass confusion and mass anxiety. The terrorists want to create mass anxiety. I'm really disappointed in the way in which Homeland Security has handled this today.
So you think that we're playing right into the hands of whoever
Absolutely.
Committed this crime?
I think it's worse than that, Leonard. I'm convinced that color-coded system is designed for a CYA, and I can't say that on the radio, but it's a political device to avoid responsibility. What the government is doing today is it's thinking to itself, we cannot really protect all of our mass transit systems against this kind of attack. We now want to show Americans that we at least take it seriously, because if it happens, they can't blame us for not taking it seriously. That's what's happening today. It's shocking, it's bad, and it's not good policy against terrorists.
My guest is Timothy Naftali, who worked as a contractor for the 9/11 Commission. He's also the director of the Miller Center's American Presidential Recordings Program at the University of Virginia and author of a number of books, most recently Blind Spot, The Secret History of American Counterterrorism, published by Basic Books. This is WNYC-FM. For continued coverage, special coverage of today's events from the news department, the BBC News, you can go to our sister station, AM 820. So I asked about the Iraq connection. The other obvious connections would be the G8 summit and also the British Olympic bid. Most people are ruling out the possibility that this has any link to Britain being awarded the Olympics in 2008?
2012, actually.
2012. I'm so out of the loop. Are the Jets getting that stadium?
Well, Yeah, well, you know, this attack clearly required some preparation. It was a coordinated attack, so it's been in the works for a few weeks. And as those who follow Olympic events closely know, London's victory yesterday was a real surprise. So unless Al-Qaeda has a penetration agent in the IOC, I don't think that this has anything to do with the Olympics bid. I do, on the other hand, think it has a lot to do with the G8 summit. What the terrorists want is maximum coverage. They want to scare us. With all of those leaders now in Scotland, the world's media is focused on Great Britain. It's a very good time to get airplay.
Well, it's lower death toll so far than the Madrid bombings, but it seems like the reaction here in the United States is much stronger for this one. Do you think that is because of what you might have suggested earlier, that President Bush has some problems right now promoting the war in Iraq, or is it because of the Bush-Blair connection or the shared heritage and language we have with Great Britain?
Well, I think I'm not suggesting a wag the dog scenario that the administration is taking advantage of this to shift to distract us. All I'm saying is the administration is using the color-coded system to shift blame if something like this should happen right now in New York or Los Angeles or Washington. Of course, it's the shared cultural connection with the British. Americans feel close to the British. They also know the British are very close allies in Iraq. The Spaniards were too, but their contribution to the war wasn't that significant. I also believe it's the summer, and in the summer, this is the time when we hear about shark attacks and women disappearing in Aruba. It's the doldrums for the media, so there's more time to play over and over again these images. I'm saying, and I made this point in Blind Spot, much of this war is psychological, and it's up to us to show resilience and to not be scared each time these things occur. Let's keep things in perspective.
Well, go ahead.
London has I don't know. I should have checked this morning, but I believe it's got 9-10 million people. Al-Qaeda wanted to kill lots of them. We've been talking about weapons of mass destruction and the possibility that Al-Qaeda would acquire them. Well, despite their efforts, what the best they could do today was to use a series of conventional bombs. It is shocking. It's awful to see people killed. But let's keep in mind that they could not replicate the death toll in Madrid, and that death toll was 191 people. It's sad, but when a plane goes down, more people die than that.
So what perspective should we keep then in this country? How should we perceive this as something?
Al-Qaeda is much weaker than the alarmists say.
Even though this was perhaps the most complex attack that they have ever attempted.
We need a little bit more information about, we really don't know, for example, how many suicide bombers were involved, whether these were suicide bombers, whether the bus attack was actually intended to be a bus attack, or whether the person blew up on their way to a tube station.
Which is what the British police are suggesting now.
Yeah, we don't know for sure. But it's no more complex than the twin bombings of the two embassies in East Africa in 1998. The point, I believe, is that Al-Qaeda is having a hard time setting up large-scale attacks. Some of the experts on Al-Qaeda have argued that they like spectaculars. Actually, the evidence that the 9/11 Commission unearthed showed that Al-Qaeda organizes as many attacks as it can, and its affiliates can. The reason we haven't had as many is that they're just, first of all, their network in the United States is weak, and their network in Europe is stronger, but even it is not as widespread as the alarmists would say. I think we should see this attack. It's horrible and sad, but I think it should be viewed as a sign of the limits of what Al-Qaeda can do against modern societies, not as a sign of how vulnerable we are.
We have to take a little break, and we'll come back with more. The bombings in Madrid affected Spanish policy. We'll find out whether Timothy Naftali thinks that will happen in Britain as well. His latest book is Blind Spot, The Secret History of American Counterterrorism from Basic Books. This is WNYC. Stay with us. We're back with Timothy Naftali, who served as a consultant on the 9/11 Commission and also is the author of Blind Spot, The Secret History of American Counterterrorism from Basic Books, among other books. As I was suggested before we went to the break, the bombings in Madrid did have an immediate impact on the Spanish government's involvement in Iraq. That seems to be unlikely in this case. But Tony Blair promised that we will track down these people. Isn't that the same kind of promise that President Bush made after 9/11 and Osama bin Laden and most of the other leaders of al-Qaeda are still at large, aren't they?
Well, Leonard, actually, I think the better parallel, if I may, is with Spain. The Spaniards actually have tracked down quite a few members of the network that perpetrated the attack on their subway system last year, on the train system last year. One of the things that studying the history of counterterrorism taught me was that you don't have to capture the leader of a terrorist organization in order to neutralize that organization. In the late 80s and early 90s, the United States mounted a phenomenally successful counterterrorism operation involving the Jordanians and the Israelis and the mainline PLO against the Abu Nidal network, which was about the same size as al-Qaeda's core, about 500 people. Al-Qaeda's core is about 500. It's not more than that. It has affiliates, and we don't know how many there are of those, but the core is about 500. And the United States was able to neutralize Abu Nidal without capturing him. In fact, he dies. He's probably killed by the Iraqis in 2002. But by 1992, his organization was completely toothless. So the same could happen with al-Qaeda. We don't really have to capture bin Laden to render it, to disrupt it. In fact, arguably, the central core of al-Qaeda is disrupted at the moment. And these attacks that we're seeing in London and we saw last year in Madrid are by people who were probably trained at Tarnak Farms, but are actually running their own operations without necessarily any communications with the mothership in Afghanistan.
Britain has dealt with domestic terror before, the IRA bombings in places like Canary Wharf. Are they more capable of dealing with it than the United States is?
In terms of their police and intelligence services, there's no reason to believe they're more capable than we are. In terms of the way that politicians, the press, and the public deal with it, yes, far more capable than we are. We still treat terrorism as if it were an intrusion on our daily lives. The reason why you should step back today and look at London and be grim about it, but be defiant, is that we are actually truly in a struggle with people who want to kill us. And the fact that we have days that are normal is a blessing. These people, if they could, would kill more and more people all the time in cities, in countries that are friendly with us and with Western civilization. They don't do it because there are limits to what they can do. But if you view this as an ongoing struggle, I don't use the word war because I don't know how this one will end, but an ongoing struggle, then what you see today is an attack on a city that pretty much wasn't as successful as al-Qaeda wanted. And if we just move forward, understand that we're going to take a few losses, but ultimately they can't beat us. Only we can destroy ourselves by altering the nature of our own society, then I think we have a healthier attitude. The British have had this attitude since the 1970s when the IRA started its bombings in London. The British did not alter their way of life. What they did was they became more vigilant. They took fewer risks. They raised the police profile in places that were likely to be hit by the IRA, and they moved forward. We can learn a lot from them. And in that, they're better than we are.
Right. Right now, there's a big debate in Britain over the issuance of ID cards. Do you think that the push will be more effective now? What about British immigration policy? In the United States, there was a major clamping down. Britain has much laxer immigration rules than we do.
Yeah, it's a great question, Leonard. I don't have an answer for the British, but it goes back to my central theme about living the lives that we need to live. The sources of our strength, and I use the R broadly to include, you know, Europe and North America. Our strength comes from open immigration, the fact that we have foreigners in our universities, the fact that because we don't produce enough engineers, we have foreign engineers working in our countries. There is a tremendous trade-off between our way of life and complete security. Complete security is impossible, and so the question is, what kinds of limits are we willing to put on immigration, on trade, in order to feel a little bit more secure? I think that's it should be a national discussion about that. I'm sure there'll be a discussion about it in Britain. I'm always hopeful that people will choose to be a little bit more open, to take a few more risks, rather than to undermine what really makes us strong, which is our open democratic system. That's what the terrorists hate about us. We shouldn't give that up in fighting them.
Actually, it's interesting that France has closed down its train service between the United Kingdom and France. Do you think that's a proportional response to the threat?
Well, here's the problem. Nobody yet knows whether if these were suicide attacks, that's a mistake, because the perpetrators are dead. If, in fact, the bombs were left by people and there's some kind of network involved, then where are these perpetrators? And so this is not such a bad move. What you want to do is keep them on the island if you can and try to find them. We just don't, I mean, the dust has to settle. Nobody really knows the nature of the attack. I will tell you one aspect of this that it is worrisome for the British. Even if it's suicide bombers, you know, suicide bombers do not act alone. You need someone to build the bomb. This is what we've seen in the Gaza Strip and in Iraq. You actually need a network to set up a suicide bombing spree. That means that there are people, there is some kind of Al-Qaeda-affiliated network in London that is operating, or it's in France and moved by the rail system to London to launch this attack. But it does mean there is a network that British intelligence and police did not get before today. So, you know, this is not a complete failure for Al-Qaeda. I understand very few people are making that argument. I'm trying to make it because I think it puts things in perspective. There is going to be some work for the British to do, and so the French precaution is probably justified.
My guest is Timothy Naftali, who worked as a contractor for the 9/11 Commission, also is the director of the Miller Center's American Presidential Recordings Program at the University of Virginia, and the author of a number of books, most recently Blind Spot, The Secret History of American Counterterrorism, which is published by Basic Books. This is WNYC 93.9 and WNYC.org. Meanwhile, on AMA20, you can hear BBC special coverage of today's events. And we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 433-WNYC. It is interesting that some of them, except for the World Trade Center, almost every other attack, well, that's not completely true. Now I'm thinking about the theater and the schools, but there have been any number of attacks on trains. We've had them in Moscow. We've had them in Madrid. And I suspect that it is because you can get to the most civilians that way. You can have the biggest bang for your buck, or will create the most havoc.
Absolutely. Well, and again, they're trying to shut down our economy. They're trying to kill as many people, and it's very hard to secure subway stations. There's so many people moving in and out of them all the time. It's particularly if you're using suicide bombers, it's very hard to do. I mean, look at the Israeli problem. I mean, the Israelis know that suicide bombers operate in their environment. They have fewer targets to worry about. They have a lot, but they have fewer targets, and they still suffer from successful suicide bombings. We don't have as many police. We're not as armed a state as Israel. And so we have more soft targets. It is a wonder that Al-Qaeda hasn't done more of these, and I do believe it's because they can't. They would like to, but they can't. We don't live in the Gaza Strip. We don't live in the West Bank, thank God.
I saw a certain irony in the fact that yesterday there was a subway announcement, as there is all the time, to beware of packages that have been left unattended. And I said to the person sitting next to me that it sounded a bit paranoid. And then today I felt like a real jerk because perhaps we should be paying more attention to those things. So we may be a little too blasé.
Why not? Leonard, why not? You know, I ask this of my friends and family. We drive to work, or unless you're in New York, I suppose. You drive to work, you take a huge risk every morning. I live in Washington, D.C., and commuting here is a nightmare. Why you take that risk every day? You've calculated the risk. You understand that it's worth taking. We put seatbelts on to minimize that risk. Why not minimize the risk when you take mass transit, knowing that there is the possibility? I mean, it's very, very, very small that some tragedy could occur. You're not going to stop living your life. I think, though, that there is something about terrorist attacks that scare people, even though the risk of them happening is much lower than the risk of getting killed in an auto accident. There's something about them that makes people inordinately fearful of them. And of course, I know I'm talking in New York, and the World Trade Center was absolutely traumatic, and it was horrendous, and it angers me that this thing happened. But we're now looking at events that are on a much lower scale than September 11th, and it's alarming people in a way that they should not.
Should we take some calls? Elliot, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you. First of all, I'm in shock. Everyone's in shock, and everyone's heart goes out to the people in London. But I remember the Madrid bombing and all the accusations and all the assumptions and all the hysteria. Of course, that's what terrorism does. And all the conclusions that were made before, and then it was found out it was Basque, I believe.
Well, first they thought it was the. I think the only people who thought it was the ETA was the Spanish government of the moment, which benefited from that idea. But I think everyone else assumed from the start that it was an Al Qaeda related thing.
And in the end, it turned out to be
Al Qaeda.
Al Qaeda.
Or Al Qaeda, or however somebody's pronouncing it today.
Well, I just would ask the question. If you think we'll be seeing any more Downing Street memos.
I'm not sure I understand that question, but...
I think somebody might.
The caller is referring to a memo that was written after the chief of British Secret Intelligence met with his colleagues in Washington, D.C. in the months before the invasion of Iraq, and it was a memo saying basically to the British government, the Americans are gunning for war, and they're looking for a way to use intelligence to make a case for a war against Saddam.
No, I understood the reference.
No, I
just
that.
Didn't understand how it could be applied today. Would this then be an excuse for invading Syria or some other place? It seems to me that, if anything, it may be used as a justification for the war in Iraq, because that has been the way the Bush administration has been positing its argument so far.
Yeah, I'm worried that that's what's going to happen, Leonard. That the fact that these groups are saying, you know, get out of Iraq, is going to be raised as a reason why we can't find a graceful exit out of Iraq, because that would be doing what the terrorists want us to do. I'm fearful of that. I mean, I mentioned, I think Iraq represents a diversion of our resources when we should be focusing on the centers of international jihadism. And until our invasion of Iraq, Iraq was not a center for international jihadism.
But it is interesting that Al-Qaeda is claiming they killed the Egyptian diplomat that they kidnapped in Iraq. What do you think that's all about? Why would they go after potential allies?
The Egyptians are not potential allies. The Egyptians are Sunni moderates. So in fact, it makes sense. Now again, you know, Zarqawi network in Iraq has every interest in expanding and exaggerating its own abilities. So it's possible that they're taking credit for something they didn't do. But let's assume they did do this.
And they're saying that the Egyptians are colluding with the Crusaders and the Zionists.
Yeah,
I understand that, but still, they would want to have more sympathy within the Arab world, and this is the sort of thing that makes you more enemies than friends, doesn't it?
No, Leonard, I think their view of it is that the Egyptian government is an enemy of jihadism, And so their allies in Egypt also hate the Egyptian government, and the Egyptian diplomat is a representative of that government. So they see this as an attack against a symbol of Egyptian oppression.
Is it significant that the attacks were near the financial district, do you think?
Well, actually, I looked at the subway system, and what's very significant, it's on the Circle Line, and those of you who know London or been to London, all of the system is pretty busy in the morning, but the Circle Line is the busiest. Mm-hmm. It's like the Beltway, if you will, around Washington.
It connects all the different lines.
That way you really hit a large stream of people that way, rather than hitting one of the ancillary lines. That's what I think was going on.
I want to sneak one more call in here. Hi, Jay.
Hello, good morning. I wanted to say, with the celebration yesterday of the winning of the Olympics bidding, hold on. Why would they wait till this morning? Like, why? Because all these people basically in Trafalgar Square celebrating. Why would they wait? Why is everyone jumping to the conclusion that it's Al Qaeda? Because when you say Al Qaeda, you start painting all of Arab as, like, you know, people are being saying, well, Al Qaeda did this. But
Jay, didn't an organization calling itself an Al Qaeda in Europe claim this? Doesn't this have all the earmarks of Al Qaeda? Al Qaeda attacks,
but also what's the name, the police from what's his name, Smith, what's his name, the Smith, the police, transit police says there was no claim, no one claimed responsibility for this, but everybody's saying Al Qaeda.
So what do you think, Timothy? Is it likely any other organization might have done this?
Well, look, I applaud the caller for showing skepticism. After the attack in Oklahoma City in 1995, I wasn't doing this kind of stuff then, but a lot of people jumped to the conclusion it was Islamic fundamentalists, and it turned out to be, of course, homegrown terrorists, Timothy McVeigh. So skepticism is a good thing. But I ask you, tell me the likely suspects, tell me the kinds of groups that are capable of a coordinated attack in a city against an underground system. There are very, very few groups that are capable of that, and almost all, with the exception of the IRA, are either affiliated with Al-Qaeda or actually directed by Osama bin Laden. So I just think it's prudent and makes sense, given the MO of this attack, to assume that it's an Islamic jihadist organization.
Just one more thing. You seem to be suggesting, or seem to have suggested, that the lessened impact of this is evidence that counterterrorism efforts are working. Are we doing a better job than we were in 2001?
Well, we're certainly doing a better job than we were in 2001. I'm not suggesting we're doing as good a job as we could. After all, I've said again and again that Iraq is a diversion of our resources. I think we could be doing a better job against Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, which is a mess, by the way, if we didn't have 138,000 troops in Iraq. But I do believe that this is evidence of two things. One, that Al-Qaeda does not have as powerful a global reach as people assumed in the aftermath of September 11th. I mean, this is terrible. It's an awful thing to have happened, but look at the number of terrorist incidents that can be directly related to Al-Qaeda outside of Iraq, and you'll see that their global reach is not quite what the alarmists have said. We can take some credit for that, of course, but this is the hard part, and we'll have to see lots of data, and it's all classified at the moment, to know to what extent we have actually thwarted or foiled Al-Qaeda attacks around the world in the last couple of years. I just don't know the answer. The 9/11 Commission discovered that we had actually foiled some attacks against American installations both in late 99, the midpoint of 2000, and again in the summer of 2001. So that was a sign that even before September 11th, our counterterrorism organizations were able to thwart attacks. I assume we've thwarted more attacks since September 11th. I just don't know the number. But I believe that part of the answer is that our enemy is not quite as strong as some would think.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Timothy Naftali, who worked as a contractor for the 9/11 Commission, director of the Miller Center's American Presidential Recordings Program at the University of Virginia, and author of Blind Spot, The Secret History of American Counterterrorism, which was published by Basic Books.
Thank you, Leonard.